You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody in that room felt like this was the right thing to do for college football, but there were some hangups in there because there were some people in the room who wanted to tie this conversation to try to use it as some leverage for 2026 and beyond, because this is a very divisive issue for the future of the college football playoff in terms of automatic qualifiers. The SEC and the Big Ten want guaranteed spots. Well, how many do they get? Do they get four? What does that mean for the ACC and the Big 12? Those are the conversations that are going on. And there were people in the room who said, hey, if you want to do what's right for college football now, let's tie it into the big picture and make sure that we're doing the same thing for 2026 and beyond.
It's Heather Dinch on the college football playoff change. Heather Dinch with Pat McAfee. College football, after 1 year in the new expanded format, changes its format, just seeding straight 1 through 12. No more automatics. They learned that lesson after 1 year. NFL talked about it, did not make changes. NHL, every year, the format looks to be a little bit silly, but here's college football 1 year in, making a change. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out on vacation this week. Just me, Jeremy, hanging with you. You can give us a ring, 803-0550. Dave Buchanan coming up with a quick Bandits preview in a couple minutes here, maybe about 10 minutes for Dave Buchanan. The Bandits are home tomorrow, 4:30. Sold out, game three of the NLL Finals, and looking for a third straight championship. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, 7:30. Matt Perino at 8. Ian Harditz at 9. Plenty of time for your phone calls mixed in as well. Good morning. 803-0550 is the number. Open up the show talking about the next most important Bills player. We all know who number one is, right? Right. Josh Allen. After that, for this year, for the team that is favored to win every game, which they are favored to win every game they are in, as of right now, who's the second most important player? There's a good list of names who would be eligible for this. Maybe by the time we get to the end of the season, we could say who ended up being, although maybe we should try that exercise on last year, like who ended up being there, who was their second most important player last year? We could do that. 803-0550, the phone number, 1-888-550-2550, on your second most important Bills player. I mentioned, I think there is a tier of three guys in there. Rousseau, Benford, Dawkins. Had a call on Joey Bosa, which I think is an interesting answer, because putting a newcomer in that spot, I get it. That does make sense to me, because what you're looking for is last year's Bills team, but with someone else to pop, whoever that might be, someone else to be a difference maker, and Bosa is on a short list of players that they've added you might be able to expect that from. So we'll go to the phones. Ryan in Buffalo is next up. Hey, Ryan, good morning.
Hey, guys. My answer to your question first would be Dawkins, but I was calling about playoff format. So this can apply to any sport, but like thinking of the NFL, like everything is a spectacle, and I love it. Like we all consume the NFL draft stuff, the NFL schedule stuff, or even like the NHL, like the lottery show, or college football, who's in, who's out show. So for playoffs, there's both a practical side and then the spectacle side. I think that once the seeding is assigned for really any sport, the top seed should have to pick who they play first, and then the second seed should have to pick who they play, and down you go.
Yeah,
and that could be a show on its own too. But you know, on the practical side of that, there's so many times where a team will have like a starting quarterback out for six games, and then all of a sudden they're the last seed in, and it's like, well, great, we just had an awesome season. Now we're forced to play the bottom seed, who's probably the second best team. So. I think it would just be fun, and I think it would add competition to all the sports and add another, spectacle to it.
One question for you, Ryan. Why do you think leagues don't go to this? Because it's been an idea out there, and some of the, lesser-known leagues do this. The only drawback, I think we would, you and I would guess, would be the bulletin board material, but would a league not do it just because of that, or they feel like it's a hassle? Like, what is the case against it?
Well, that's probably it. That's why I'm saying it has to be mandatory. So the bulletin board material, I think, would be the answer to that. But if the league made it mandatory, then it couldn't be bulletin board material because you have to do it. No one's saying, like, well, you can pick or you can just, you have to.
Right. Yeah, that'd be different. Thanks, Ryan. If it's either here's your matchup, or if you'd like to swoop in and change it, yeah, there's a default matchup and there's the right to switch. All right, that's interesting. You pick your opponent, or here's a right to switch if you want to, you know, use this card. Any team that maybe that's something they should give to the 2 seed. The 1 seed gets the bye, the 2 seed picks its first round opponent. Because what you would like is, I mean, I miss the days of the 2 seed getting a bye, mainly because the Bills are always the 2 seed, right? Like, how many years in a row? The 2 seed has not won the Super Bowl, is that right, since the invention of the single first round bye? What were the Eagles last year? Should I remember this? NFL playoff picture last year. I got to pull it up. But the 2 seed, you know, we used to be resting that 2 seed. And unfortunately, the Bills started to get the 2 seed right as that went away. I don't know how they're going to bring it back. If they had an 18th game, are they going to add another team and have 8 teams in the playoffs? Because you could try to do that. 803-0550, our phone number. But the numbers of that would still be goofy unless you're going to go 3 first-round buys. And I've got 3 teams in the first round and 6 teams in the second. So am I going to 9 playoff teams to get 3 buys? I like the buy. The buy is always something that, you know, it's nice to see teams that are the best get rewarded. And maybe this is the year for the Bills to get it. And we're glad that there's no bye for the 2 seed. That'll be the Bills' luck, right? The NFL reintroduces the bye for the 2 seed, and that year the Bills get the 1, and whoever the 2 is gets a rest that the Bills would have gotten in all these years. Ron in Pittsburgh. Hey, Ron, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joe. How are you today?
Doing good.
Awesome. Hey, football format. So let's take the NFL. If you have a bottom-ranked team, if you're 8 and you're playing number 1 or whatever the numbers are, right? If that number 8 beats number 1, I think they should take over that number 1 spot. That would make those games so much more exciting. They don't have a home game scheduled, but if they beat a number 1, their next game's at home.
Yeah. So if the 2 and the 7 play, the 7 wins, the 7 takes the 2 seed.
Absolutely.
All right, transferable seeds. Yeah. It's one thing. Thanks, Ron. There are some leagues. I mean, the NCAA tournament is like this, right? The lower seed wins. They don't immediately get punished to go play the highest seed, and that is something that happens in the NFL. If the 7 knocks off the 2, that 7 has to go on the road immediately and play the 1. And I guess, what's the argument there? The argument there is if you are – your first-round matchups are – oh boy, I'm sorry for the numbers here – 2-7 and 3-6. If you're the 3 and you win your game as you're supposed to, but the 7 wins, should you be punished and have to go on the road to play that 7 seed that has taken the 2? That might be a tough sell for people. Mark in Tonawanda. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Mark.
I disagree with the last card, Deion Dawkins. I think Josh Allen covers, you know, a multitude of those offensive line woes when Spencer Brown was out. The offense didn't seem to really miss a beat, and that's because, you know, we got the best quarterback in the league. But I would say Ed Oliver is number 2, and with all the moves they've made on the defensive side of the ball coming into this season, that whole group's been bolstered, and I just think it's time for Ed Oliver to make a huge play in one of these playoff games or – and just step up and have him listen to you. Thanks,
yeah,
buddy.
Thanks, Mark. He's one of the ones you would hope would have a bounce-back season. I don't know that he had a bad season, but, you know, were there enough game-changing plays? Oliver, I mean, it's funny, like, the timeline of expectations and the timeline of, you know, when you sign. Oliver signs that extension, immediately has an incredible year. We're all thinking, like, wow, what? Thank goodness they signed him, because he just had his best year. And then the year after, it's not quite as good. So it's interesting. The Eagles were the number 2 seed last year. So a 2 seed has indeed won a Super Bowl since losing the bye. They, of course, beat the Packers, then the Rams, and then the Commanders on the way to winning the Super Bowl over the Chiefs. So 2 seed gets it done. 803-0550. Oliver, not a bad name here. We'll talk to Joe Marino about his full list of the top 10 most important Bills. His was for the future, not necessarily just for this year, which is why James Cook did not make the list ultimately. So we'll talk about that with Joe Marino coming up at the bottom of the hour. Joe of the Locked On Bills podcast. Had to shuffle on a couple days. Usually we talk on Wednesdays. He's jumping in today. Joining us on the Western Hotline, Dave Buchanan, as the Bandits get set for their championship parade, their championship victory. It's game three of the NFL Finals tomorrow, 4:30 at KeyBank Center. Bukes, good morning.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
I'm all right. Nerves, or is this normal for Bandit Land, right? I mean, a championship game, winner-take-all, at home, sold-out arena. Like, this is how the Bandits roll these days.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually going to be the fourth NLL season in a row where the NLL champions, the NLL Cup, is going to be handed out in Buffalo in 2022 with Colorado winning in Game 3, but the last 2 years, Buffalo has clinched the cup on the home turf here at KeyBank Center, and it looks like the lacrosse gods wanted to do it one more time this year.
How quickly, Dave, did you, and not that the Bandits themselves would do this, but how quickly was it an easy adjustment to, all right, they lost game two. They were winning, and kind of late in that game, they had a chance to close that out. They did not ultimately win. And to come back home to the arena, you know, it's an easy justification. It's kind of a conversation people have every single year when you have the opportunity to close at home. Was it a quick and easy kind of transition there?
I think so. I mean, this the way the schedule worked out, where you had this week off between games two and three, is, you know, kind of standard practice in the National Lacrosse League. So I'm sure these guys maybe, you know, spent the flight home Monday thinking about it, and then probably started reviewing film Tuesday, Wednesday, and they'll practice tonight. So they'll be fully focused and locked in on game three tomorrow.
Game three tomorrow against Saskatchewan. What about this matchup, Dave, are people watching for? Like, if you're going to be at the game or watching or listening, what is it about Saskatchewan that makes them tough?
I think it's a very evenly matched series, and really what it's come down to, I think, is the team that has made the least amount of mistakes and missed the least amount of shots that has come out on top through these first two games. So I think you just got to watch, you know, which team doesn't mess up as much. I think Buffalo really needs to come out of the box fast tomorrow, though. You know, both games so far this series, they've gotten down 2-0, 3-0, and have had to spend a good chunk of the first half playing from behind. And I think with this home crowd and with the nerves that come along with game three, if they get down 2-0, 3-0 tomorrow, you know, the KeyBank Center crowd will be quieted pretty quickly. So I think they need to come out strong, make a statement, and get the fans into it. To really, you know, get this thing back on track.
Dave, do you get the impression, you know, we could make this comparison to any sport here, really, where you have a chance to go for your third in a row. On one hand, there's potentially the pressure of, you know, in your own sport, going for dynasty status, like legend immortality, versus you've done it a bunch, so you don't get caught up in how important a game might be.
Yeah, I think the Bandits have done a pretty good job about it. I mean, they haven't talked about it a ton this season, about the whole three-peat thing. We've heard it a little bit maybe from John Tavares, but the players have not made a big deal about it this year, I don't think, in my opinion. And I think that is one advantage the Bandits do have, is they are the veteran team that has been to the last five finals, whereas Saskatchewan, you know, this group, at least altogether, it's their first time in the finals. They've got some guys with some finals appearances, you know, like a guy like Robert Church, who was with the Rush the last time they went to the finals in 2018. So I think that is in the Bandits' favor. And I think we saw a little bit of that game one, whereas Buffalo kind of went 10 rounds in game one, and Saskatchewan kind of petered out there towards the end of that opening game. And I think that chalked that up to that finals experience.
One thing that happened in game two there, talking with Dave Buchanan, sideline reporter for the Bandits, back-to-back champs going for number three tomorrow at KeyBank Center for a sold-out crowd. One thing we saw in game two, it's too bad it goes in a loss because, you know, it's one of the best goals you'll see. Chase Frazier on that. What's that move called, Dave? What do they got, like a behind the back, between the legs? Standard for Chase Frazier?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he busts that out. For some reason, especially if it's the Toronto Rock in the playoffs, Chase likes to bust those behind the back and between the legs goals out. So that's nothing new from Chase. You know, it's a fun way to kind of get one of those juice goals, they like to call it, and get the team going. And it was like you watch DeHoga Nanacoke, he puts his hands to his face, and it's like that one gif you always see on Twitter of those group of kids, like, you know, going nuts because their friend just did something really cool, and that one guy has his hands over his head. That's what DeHoga Nanacoke looked like behind the play as he saw that ball go in. That's just Chase being Chase. He's very talented. And he has a great sensibility when to bust it out. He's not just doing it willy-nilly. He sees an opportunity to score, and that's why he can do that.
Saturday, 4:30. You got a pick? You feel good? Bandits get it done?
The optimist in me, or the homer in me, whatever you want to say, I'm hoping this goes like the Colorado series a couple years ago, where they came back from Denver after getting kind of trounced in Denver, and they went out and beat them 13-4 to clinch their first championship. I like to see it do the same, but I think this game's going to be a lot closer. But I think Buffalo eventually has the edge. One line that's been kind of popular here is it's first team to 11 goals, and I kind of agree with that. So I expect it'll be like another 11-9, 11-10 game tomorrow in Buffalo.
All right. Dave Buchanan on the Western Hotline ahead of the Bandits game at KeyBank Center. Thanks, Dave.
Good talking to you, Jeremy. Have a good weekend.
All right. 4:30 Saturday. That game sold out. Sold out KeyBank Center in May. Memories. Not trying to take anything away from, like, the Bandits. I would imagine sometimes Bandits fans might get annoyed at hearing a Sabres fan be like, I only wish we could really do that again. They're like, we're here doing it. It's happening. It's Saturday, May 24th. Oh, we're here in a sold-out building with a chance to, you know, have a really big game. But someday, the Sabres again, we'll see. Bandits coverage on WGR begins at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So, you know, gear up and pop it on. ESPN Plus, where you go to watch the stream the Bandits games. I've been doing that every time they're on in these playoffs. So ESPN Plus for that. Also, of course, you got your full boat this weekend in the NHL. Got a quick thought on the Sabres. I have a thought for a minute for it here. Yeah, we'll do it, because, and maybe we'll dig into this a little bit later. Brendan Shanahan out with the Leafs. Should I not bring up his name as an idea? And let me tell you why I don't want to do it. Whenever we mention somebody, the idea lasts 24 hours and that person is gone. Did we talk about Michael Pekka yesterday? Pekka has accepted a job. He's going to be an assistant with the Blackhawks, so he's not going to join the Sabres staff or front office. So we mention a name, like, hey, what about the Sabres grab so-and-so? And then by 4:15 today, he's jumping on somewhere else. Shanahan will just join the Red Wings front office later today if we suggest he should join the Sabres.
I think the Islanders reached out to the Leafs and said, hey, can we talk to him? So.
Okay. Well, aren't there, have the Sabres? Isn't Brendan Shanahan a great idea? Isn't anybody like this a great idea?
I think he is. Like we say, it's hard to bring these ideas up without feeling like it's a pipe dream.
Well, but one thing I wonder is, like, if the Sabres were to reach out and get in a room, could anybody kind of stage a coup? Could Terry Pegula be convinced he would work for me, but he doesn't want to work underneath Kevin Adams, so I'll just go ahead and give the reins to Brendan Shanahan? I mean, it's kind of hard to understand how things could happen given their structuring and how they work. But if you could get somebody that is accomplished, and Shanahan helped to take the Leafs from perennial nothing to powerhouse, if I could kind of...
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say regular season powerhouse. Right. Granted, the way they did that hold on, let me check. A bunch of high picks. They did some free agency moves too.
I think it might be valuable just to get in a room and see what he says about your team.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't think you have a chance to get him.
Wouldn't a person, and I'm trying not to like take a shot at Kevin Adams here, who... You know, I think given resources this offseason could get this team to the playoffs with the right couple of moves. But wouldn't it be reasonable to think that a high-profile executive comes in and says, would do this with anybody, not even just with Kevin Adams. Doesn't have to be a Kevin Adams point. Would walk in and say, like, yeah, give the job to me. I'll get it done. Not I advise someone else on how to get it done, but give the job to me. I'll do it.
I think that's kind of part of what he missed in Toronto a lot of the time, was he always had somebody else. It was Lou, and then it was Dubas, and now it's been Tree. And I think he might want to really be president and GM, or like just have an organization completely in his control, one owner on like MLSE. I really like the idea. I think he could provide a lot of value.
803-0550. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. When we return, get his thoughts on the Bills being on Hard Knocks and his project there, the 10 most important Bills of the future. 803-0550. If you'd like to join us, 1-888-550. Bandits game on ESPN+. Plus. Also, straight on ESPN2. Thank you, Brandon, for pointing that out. ESPN2. And, of course, here on WGR.
My favorite thing about Deion is Deion does Deion, and he does it really, really well. Said this before, if I'm going to go to a clinic, walk up there, and I'm going to teach 350 offensive line coaches, I will use Deion's stuff, like his hand stuff. Deion does Deion, and Deion does not care, and it's awesome to see. He might be one of my favorite players of all time in the NFL.
It's Big Jerry O, Jerry Ostrowski on Deion Dawkins as part of Joe Marino's Top 10 Most Important Bills Players of the Future. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Sneaky Joe. He's on vacation this week. Joe Marino joining us on the Western Hotline. We talked to Joe on Wednesdays. We moved it to Friday. Mr. Marino, good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Jeremy. Glad you get to speak to a Joe this morning.
I know.
You
know, check the box. I have to. I have to make sure that I do. I have to make sure. Good to have you on. Good to chat again. So I was using a little bit of what we talked about and what you've done this week, your annual top 10 most important players to the Bills. It ran this week. You have your panel of lots of different Bills analysts. And, you know, the good question, number one is easy, right? Everybody knows number one. We have to talk about number one. It's Josh Allen. But after that, you kind of get to see how the most highly thought of players from an impact perspective, who they are, and it's also about like stock moving up and down. What Bills fans think of these players. So what did you see this year when you put it all together, when you asked the panel who are the risers, who are the fallers into the top 10 and out of the top 10?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting part, is to look at who rose and who fell. And I think the story really comes down to the guys that fell, where you saw Dalton Kincaid went from number 2 at this time last year to number 8. You saw Ed Oliver fall from 3 to 10. You saw Keon Coleman go from number 4, a guy that was the 33rd pick in the draft, and he fell all the way to 15. And even Matt Milano was number 8, was not ranked at all, didn't get a single vote this year. And so those were the names that really stood out in terms of fallers. And you could see, I mean, some of those guys had a level of disappointment, or basically the production didn't quite meet the expectation, right? I mean, I think you could say that about all 4 of those guys. But then on the other side of that are the guys who jumped up quite a bit. Christian Benford goes from 9 to 4. Spencer Brown from 13 to 5. Khalil Shakir, 14 to 7. Big risers as well. So that's kind of the interesting part about the other side of that equation. But, you know, the panel rides the waves too. And it's funny how things can change dramatically year to year. I think this is maybe the best way to encapsulate all the changes, is I've now done this project 5 years in a row. There has been 4 different number 2 players in that span, including the last 3 years, somebody different. In 23, it was Diggs. In 24, it was Kincaid. And now this year, it's Greg Rousseau. And so, you know, this team's about Josh Allen. Yep. That's kind of how you started to phrase this question about, you know, how it really gets interesting at number one, but it's really true. This is a team that their number one player, and Josh Allen, is probably the gap between 1 to 2 for the Bills is probably bigger than any other team in the league.
And maybe one of the next conversations that Bills fans start to have, like this offseason was about adding a bunch of players, but also about signing their own. And on your top 10, you see the guys that they signed. You know, they re-up Rousseau and Benford and Bernard and Shakir, 4 guys that got contracts. And one of the, I think, obvious questions as you start to turn to the future is, Joe, who's next? Like, who's next in line for a contract that Bills fans should keep an eye on? And, of course, I mean, who's next that's not named James Cook? He'll be the highest profile guy to talk about, and his expiring contract is a big part there. But who else is on the to-do list for Brandon Bean right now?
Well, way to put that on a platter for me. Today's episode of Locked On Bills is literally me talking about the players on the roster that are due for a bump. And it does extend beyond James Cook. And I think that the marquee name is Connor McGovern, the Bills starting center. And he's set to play the last year of his deal this year, and certainly a huge piece of this offensive line. And that entire transition that they undertook last year was rooted in getting Connor McGovern to the center position. And you'd like that to be more than a 2-year deal in terms of him playing that position and how important that is for, you know, the protection calls and being on the same page with Josh Allen. It wouldn't be a position I'd like to reset at. And you've seen some big center deals. I mean, the top of the market is Creed Humphrey. That's $18 million a season. I don't think we're talking there, but Cam Jurgens with the Eagles just got $17 million. Drew Dahlman, who went from the Falcons to the Bears, got $14 million. And I think that's probably where you start to talk about where it makes sense for Connor McGovern in terms of actual market value, right at about $14 million a season. And McGovern, in an interview that he did on Cover One with the film room there, said they talked after the season, and they're tabled for now, and said, look, he'd like to stay in Buffalo, but sometimes business can get in the way of those things. And he also made a point to say that when he came to Buffalo, he took less money than what was out there for other destinations. And so you could see that one being expensive, but one that I think should be a priority for the Bills. And then beyond that, I think it's the guys from the 2023 draft class that are extension eligible after this year, which would then be Osiris Torrance, the Dalton Kincaid conversation, and then another starter, David Edwards. And so really the story for me on who's next is it's the entire interior offensive line starters of David Edwards, Connor McGovern, and Osiris Torrance.
Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast on the Western Hotline. You know, Joe, I want to ask you about McGovern. I just quickly looked up his age, and he's 1 year younger than Mitch Morse. And, you know, age to a point is just a number. Here's Morse, whose career is over, right? I mean, he was contemplating retirement. Could he come back? How much longer could he do it? He had a bunch of concussion issues along the way. McGovern is 1 year younger, and I don't know. I'll confess to not knowing center age curves the way that I might know that for receivers and running backs, right? Like 27 is the magic number for running back, and for receiver it might be 30. For centers, how long do they last? How long can Connor McGovern expect to continue to play at a high level?
Jeremy, I fear you may have looked at the other Connor McGovern's age from the Jets. The Bills' Connor McGovern is 27.
You're right, I did.
November, yeah. Oh, it's happened to me in plenty of times. So I
okay,
I feel 27 that for sure.
Well, then standing down, 27 sounds great.
Yeah, so that the age factor there with him, he'll be 27 for a good part of this season. 28 when he signs the extension. I think you'd probably be looking at a 5-year window of where you'd expect him to be a good starter.
Probably right around the age that Mitch Morse was when he signed here.
Yeah, I think you give him some maybe a 4-year. $60 million deal that would get him at $15 million a season. That probably gets it done. But the question that you do have to ask yourself, and I think I've kind of made it clear that I hope that the Bills get something done with Connor McGovern, you might have to choose. You might have to choose between Torrance and McGovern.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about a younger player that you drafted. That's appealing. Can you pay them both? Can you pay Dawkins, Brown, McGovern, and Torrance? Great problem to have, right? This is a good offensive line. But do you at some point just have to lean into that you can't play them all? You have a great offensive line coach in Aaron Cromer, and trust this pipeline that's been developing some players in an Alec Anderson or a Ryan Vandermark or a Cedric Van Pran Granger or Tylan Grable. Tylan Grable's the name for me that I am just enthralled with. I thought he was terrific in the preseason last year. He won the swing tackle job twice, and that's notable because the first time he won it, he's a 6th-round rookie. He beat out Ryan Vandermark, who was the swing tackle in 2023. Then Grable gets the core muscle injury and comes back and beats him out again later in the season. And so Grable's a guy that I think projects well to playing guard. And I think the easiest player to say, you know what, we'll move on from, that's probably David Edwards, because I think he's a good starter. But, you know, you start to ask yourself questions about replaceability and, like, what the ceiling is there, and you probably could move on there. You could look at Tylan Grable as maybe the successor at left guard, where from a measurables perspective, height, weight, length, Grable and Edwards are literally the same. And so that's definitely a path that I'm not sleeping on.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us on the Wester Hotline. The Bills getting set for a round of OTAs next week. And, you know, we'll keep an eye on them in OTAs and mandatory minicamp. But once we get off the training camp, Joe, Hard Knocks has chosen the Bills. It's the first time they were ever unable to opt out. So maybe Hard Knocks has wanted Josh Allen and the Bills and St. John Fisher for many years. This is the first time they'll get a chance to get him. And I'm excited. I don't think there's distraction issues here. I mean, you'll get people that worry about this, but I'm not one of them. And are you?
No, I'm not. I don't think the Bills are going to do a thing different. They're going to practice and have meetings like they always have, and we're just going to get some really cool access to see stuff behind the scenes. I don't know that the results of this season will be impacted whatsoever by the Bills being on Hard Knocks. The team has control. They are able to say yes and no to certain things that will be seen and not seen, and I think that's an important layer of anyone that's nervous that, you know, the secrets are going to be exposed for how the Bills are going to win the division this year. And I think where maybe I would have the most concern is not necessarily anything like that. It's, you know, there are candid moments. There is phrasing. People can take things certain ways. And, you know, Jeremy, we'll probably have to spend some time after every episode that comes out clarifying, digging into, oh, why'd they say that? Why did somebody look this way? It's going to be maybe those conversations that become a little bit aggravating. But at the end of the day, you know, Josh Allen's going to throw the ball like he normally does, and Deion Dawkins is going to block like he normally does, and the Bills will, their fate will be unaffected by the presence of Hard Knocks, but we will get a lot of cool behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, very excited. Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. Finally, Joe, before we go, you know, going through some Bills/league news, the other big news is the protector of the year from Deion Dawkins. He and Andrew Whitworth kind of spearhead this, and they get it over the line. And next year, when we're in season, we can be debating whether or not player X, player Y is worthy of Protector of the Year award.
Yeah, offensive line debates. Let's go. I'm excited for it. It was really cool to listen to Deion talk about, of course, the genesis of it and what he did to get it done, but really the selection process where you and I and Jerry Ostrowski had a conversation on Bill Squad on Thursday about, you know, how unique of an award it is. And, you know, I guess we just assumed it would be the regular voting process for all the other awards, but it's not, right? There's like a committee that is based on players that care about these certain analytics, and it sounds like it's a pretty thorough process to get the right names on the board, because it's no longer, you know, look at how many touchdowns this guy scored and how many yards they had, right? It's not that. So I'm excited that there's some unique criteria and a panel that's going to select this.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, thanks for the time. Enjoy the holiday weekend. We'll talk soon.
Of course. Thanks, Jeremy.
You can find Joe Marino at the Locked On Bills podcast, where you get your podcasts. He and I and Jerry O do that show, Bills Squad, part of the Locked On Bills podcast as well. Check it out where you get your podcasts and on YouTube. Like and subscribe there. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Memorial Day weekend upon us. Rain. Is it currently raining? Yes. I'm just going to say yes, wherever you are. It might be. You see.
It actually doesn't look like it
no?
is.
No? Right around us? You could walk outside and not get hit with a raindrop?
Well, the wind might blow it off the trees, but I don't think it's currently falling from the sky.
All right. Wait 5 minutes. It's a lot of rain. A lot of rain. All right. When we get back, got a couple things to get to. Matt Perino of the Shout podcast. He'll join us top of the hour. We're going to talk to him not only about the Bills, but about Patchy Mix. UFC 316 on the way, and we've got a Buffalo guy in there, an Angola guy. So, you know, maybe a reason to kind of jump behind a UFC fighter if you're interested in that. We'll get the story of Patchy Mix coming up at 8 o'clock and some Bills talk with Matt Perino. It's all coming up. 803-0550, open phone line for you on the most important Bill that's not Josh Allen, and, you know, some general Friday stuff that we've been getting to. 803-0550 here on WGR.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to 13, Joel Damon on the tee.
Come on, here
we go. See if this comes back. Where are you, ball?
Here we go.
I might have a shot here. Dennis, get in the hole. Yes! With an ace here at 13.
Joel Damon at the Schwab Challenge with an ace. That's at the Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas. A thought occurs to me right now as it rains here. You know how... Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Joe's on vacation. Owen's here. Josh is here. You guys, you know how when the NCAA tournament happens, there are these studies that indicate like, hey, $2 billion of business has been lost by people watching the games? How about a similar study, but how many holes in one has this nor'easter cost Americans?
Ooh.
5,000 holes. Golf can't be played. Somebody would have had a hole in one today. Somebody.
5,000 might be a bit aggressive.
Not in just Buffalo. It's a big storm.
That's true.
Go take a look at the radar map. The entire eastern northeast can't golf. Look, think of all the holes in one that have not been hit.
Similar to your...
I might have had one.
Similar to your point about the money, though. Like, imagine how much money all these golf courses aren't making.
Well, that's true, too.
Is that impacting the economy at all?
You know what? People are asking. People are asking.
The hole-in-one point's a good one, though. Because, like, how many hole-in-ones happen per day in America?
I was as close as I've ever been to witnessing one the other day.
Yeah.
When we saw you on, was that Sunday?
Yeah.
At Delaware? We came in and the starter was like, you just missed a hole in one on nine.
Really?
Just as you guys walked by, they just had left the tee. And then we watched you almost hit a hole in one on eight.
It looked close.
It was close.
It was like 3 feet.
Wow. That's pretty close.
How close do you have to be to say you almost had one? Close. Ooh. Because you could, what if you roll past it 6 feet, but you miss by an inch to the right?
I've done that before.
It's hard to see from distance, but...
Well, it was a shorter par three, and me and my buddies, like, I hit it, and I was like, oh, that's, like, well enough.
Close.
And I saw it land, and then he's watching, he's like, whoa, wait a minute. And I, like, turn and look, and it's, like, 2 inches away from the hole, but it rolled past the hole.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm like, is that
close
enough?
Do we care more about path or finish for
good question.
Close to...
Yeah, because if you finish 3 feet short... You never even got there.
Right, it was never
how
had a
close
chance.
Were you? Whereas if you roll 6 feet past and you just missed it, but anyway, the weather stinks. Hopefully it's going to get nice soon. Matt Perino joins me after the break. We're going to talk about a little bit of Bills and also some UFC. UFC 316 will feature the debut of Patchy Mix, a Angola fighter who has been in this area on some of these lower circuits and has signed with UFC. He's getting a look at UFC 316, so wanted to kind of get his story. You know, Matt's, of course, covering the Bills, but has spent time covering the UFC and is pretty much who we go to say, like, hey, what's going on in the fight game? So Matt Perino on the other side. We'll chat some Bills and some Patchy Mix coming up here on WGR.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? Well, then listen to What We Spend, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.